so small since the time she... On behalf of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, it gives me great pleasure to welcome each and every one of you who has come to participate in this beautiful festival. We are very, very grateful to each and every one of you because you have spared your precious time to come here and be a part of Chetna. So today's topic is Faith Can Move Mountains. We'll start off with a small little anecdote. Once there was a farmer. He lived in a hilly area. Very simple farmer. Didn't have much. But he was very satisfied with whatever he had, whatever he possessed. So he was not very rich, so he didn't possess a horse. Now, you know, in a hilly area, to get a lot of things done, you need a horse, right? Going up and down. But this farmer did not have a horse. And the rest of the village, everyone else, had a horse. So every time they would see him toiling hard, you know, going up and down with so much difficulty, they would all come and shake their heads and say, "Such bad luck. You don't have a horse." They would just shrug their shoulders. And the farmer, he would just look back at them, give a big smile, and say, "Good luck, bad luck, who knows? I just know God's mercy." And then they would go off. After some time, this man acquired a horse. He got a horse. So they all came back saying, "Wow, good luck. Now you've got a horse." So he again looked back at them, same smile. He said, "Good luck, bad luck, who knows? I just know God's mercy." After some time, this farmer's son, he was riding on this horse in that area. And somehow the horse, you know, skidded and this boy fell off the horse down a cliff. And he was badly hurt, you know, he broke his bones. He was very bad shape. And then he was just saved with his life, that's all. So all the people came back and they say, "Oh, so sad. Bad luck, huh? Just see. What a misfortune." And the farmer again just smiled back saying, "Good luck, bad luck, who knows? I just know God's mercy." After some days, the king of that area, he declared a war against a neighboring kingdom. So obviously, when there is a war, what do you need? Soldiers, right? So all young men in that area were recruited. They had to go. There's no option. It's not like war of the present day. You had to go. The king has called. So all the young men in that village had to go to be a part of this war. And who was spared? Just that young boy, the son of that farmer. Why? Because his bones were broken. So everyone's children went off and everyone was sad. And then they saw, this boy is just left behind. So they came, everyone, "Good luck, Just see, you're spared from the war." So the farmer again smiled and he just said, "Good luck, bad luck, who knows? I just know God's mercy." So basically, this is just to show that how in our own lives, it's very similar, right? Sometimes things happen very nice, and everybody is saying, "Oh, very nice, very nice." And sometimes things just go not the way we want it to go. And everybody's like, "Oh, so sad." But what is very, very, very significant in that farmer's behavior, very striking, is that through all this, even the good situations, apparently good, apparently bad, he was the same. He was equipoised. Didn't make a difference. It was not that he was jumping around, "Wow," and the next moment he was crying, "Oh, what misery." No, he was just through absolutely as if doesn't make a difference. Why was that? because he had something very focused. And that was that he had complete faith, this is God's mercy. Whatever happens, ups, downs, he was perfectly situated. Huh? So that is faith. So today, we are going to discuss on this topic of faith. Yeah. So first we'll see what is the definition of faith. So the Webster's dictionary, it explains that faith is a firm belief in something that has no proof. There's no logic, there's no proof, but someone has firm belief in something. That's faith. That's the normal standard definition of faith. But usually the general understanding is that people feel that I am not in for all this faith and all this stuff. You know, I live in a world where there's so much of science, so much of technology. All this faith and all that is for people who are, you know, those orthodox religious types. You know, it's only for them. Science is fact. Religion is faith. Have you heard this? Yeah? Is it true? Have everybody heard this? That science is fact and religion is faith? Yes. Very, very common. Everybody says that. Oh, no, Bhagwan, Bhagwan is all... No. But is it true? Is it that science is only fact and religion is faith? Yes? You have to be with me through the class. I will not be going on talking. It's the other way, okay? Yeah, it is true to some extent, but it's not always true. Huh? In fact, faith is such an important ingredient that faith is something which is on every moment of our lives. In our day-to-day lives, even to do normal things, you need faith. We are all from Mumbai, most of us, I believe. And most of us were here on some 10 months, not 10 months, 8, 9 months, November 26th, when there was a huge terrorist attack. Where? In Mumbai CST station. Right? Now we all go and come by train. Right? So every time you enter into the train or every time you enter into the train station, do you go around carrying a survey? Is there any terrorist? Is there any bomb? Do we do that? Anyone in this room who does that? No. But is there any guarantee that there will not be a terrorist or no bomb? Yeah? No, we're just doing it on faith. Correct? Just faith that, okay, I'll reach. Yeah, that's faith. Right? Recently there was an air crash. Air France. Yes, the plane crashed or whatever. Nobody knows what happened, but into the Atlantic. So many times when we sit and they don't know what is the cause. We are so forward in technology, but now still we don't know what is the cause. Why did the plane fall into the Atlantic Ocean? So they say probably electrical, some technical fault, something. Now, how many of us, when you're going to board a plane, say, stop, wait, I will not let the plane, you know, start off without me seeing the report that all the technical things have been checked by the service engineer. I don't trust you. Let me check. Do we do that? How many times do we do it? How do we ever do it? So what is it? You're leaving your life. You're sitting in the plane. You don't even know that we're going to land or not. Yeah? We are giving up our life completely on the faith that everything is checked. That the plane won't land into the Arabian Sea or into any ocean. It won't break. They're even saying that probably it just, you know, blasted mid-air or something. What is the guarantee? We're just doing it on faith. Right? Isn't it just blind faith to close your eyes and say, okay, now, just cross my fingers. I will reach. Yes? In so many places of the world, when the plane finally lands, they all clap. We've landed. It's faith. when you go to a restaurant to eat something, what do you know if that waiter has not put poison in your food? Do you check? Chemical analysis of every morsel. Do we do that? Anybody does that here? No, we're just having faith. Faith in that waiter, faith in that restaurant that they have not served you poison. They have served you food. Huh? And when we go to the doctor, yeah, we go to the surgeon, you're going to get operated. And that also under anesthesia. You don't even know what's happening. Huh? You can just remove your kidney or something like that. How do we know? Yeah? Do we know? It has happened, huh? There have been so many like that. But what is it that it's faith? Right? It's just faith. So faith is not some far off thing. It's something that every moment of our lives, our day to day things, we are having faith. Just faith on so many things. But then when we say faith and religion, people are like, oh no, no. I am very scientific, you see. Right? So it's not that, science is bad or something like that. But then we need to understand things in the right perspective. Even in science, there are so many principles. Of course, so many students of science would know that. There are so many principles in physics and basic mathematics which can't be proven. But they are fundamental principles on which your whole theories are based. But you ask to prove, no one can prove. But it's accepted. Accepted on what? On what? Faith. Yes? But the atheistic scientists, they challenge. Oh, we don't believe. We don't believe. So this is a whole different dimension altogether. We can, keep on speaking for hours on science and proving that it's not the way that atheistic scientists present it to be and the way the common man believes it. Suffice it to, with just one example, that Srila Prabhupada, the founder Acharya of ISKCON, would always say, he would always quote this example of how the atheistic scientists, they say, oh, we have not seen God, so how do I believe God? And so many things. They say, when it comes to religion, they say, we have not seen, you prove it, then I will believe. Seeing is believing, all these different theories. So, we can see an example, very nice example, which Srila Prabhupada to quote, is of Dr. Frog. How many of you have heard the example of Dr. Frog? Please raise your hands. Oh, no one? Dr. Frog. Okay, now there was a very, very learned frog who lived in a well. Huh? Very learned. Very learned frog means he was absolutely knowledgeable about everything in that well. Okay? Everything. He knew all the bricks in that well. He knew the water content. Maybe even the chemical analysis of all the water in that well. Everything about that well. He was PhD. That's why he was called as Dr. Frog. Very respected by all the entities living in that well. He had never in his life gone out of the well. Whole life he had only spent in the well, but he was very, very learned. Okay? Now one fine day, there's another little frog who jumps into the well. So Dr. Frog is like the authority in that well. So he looks at his other frog, he says, yes, where have you come from? So his other frog says, oh Dr. Frog, I have come from the Atlantic Ocean. So Dr. Frog says, Atlantic Ocean? What is that? See, it's a big body of water. Huge reservoir of water. So Dr. Frog says, big body of water? How big? Double the size of my well? He says, no, no, Dr. Frog, it's huge. You just can't compare it with the well. See, is it 5 times the size of this well? Is it 10 times the size of this well? Say, no, no, you can't. You have, more than the well. Is it 20 times the size of this well? So the other frog says, no, it's much, much bigger than this little well. He said, why don't you just come with me out of this well? I'll show you the Atlantic Ocean. You can see. It's huge. So Dr. Frog says, unscientific. I don't believe that the Atlantic Ocean exists. If you want to prove that the Atlantic Ocean exists, then get the Atlantic Ocean here. Then I will believe. What do you call that? Absurd. What would happen if the Atlantic Ocean actually comes to the well? What will happen? Yes? Yeah? Sorry? Yes. There will be no Dr. Frog to see the Atlantic Ocean. He will be drowned in the Atlantic Ocean. Right? So it's absurd. Right? Do you agree? Yes. So it is the same way. There's so many of us, we are there in our own little wells in this material world. We may have some knowledge, either as scientists or even normal people. We think we know a lot. Right? But when someone comes and says, no, there's something beyond this. Please think there's something beyond this. Say, oh no. There is a Lord. There is a God. There is the Lord's creation. I don't see it. Let God come in front of me. It's like calling the Atlantic Ocean into that well. Huh? Very absurd. So today, just like that little frog invited Dr. Frog to come out of his little well and experience something much higher, something more magnificent, and something much more huge. So this small presentation of the next few minutes, I would like to invite all of you to come out of our own little wells of understanding that we have had, either from our own experiences or whatever we have read or what you have studied, our own academic knowledge, whatever we have had, like our own little Dr. Frogs that we are. Today, I just want you to just move out, accompany to go and see that huge, magnificent Atlantic Ocean. That there is something much, much more higher and much more huge that is there to visualize, understand, and implement. So this is not my viewpoint, nor your viewpoint. This, we are going to see this topic from the perspective, or rather, the statements of the Creator Himself. The person who has created this creation, what does He say about faith? The Supreme Lord. So it's not I saying or you saying, I believe faith is like that, I believe. No. So where does the Supreme Lord say what He has to say? Is He? Yes? Someone? Please don't get scared. I'm not carrying out any exam here. Nor will I rate you as right or wrong. Yes? So just be free enough to just speak. Yes. Scriptures, yes, the Shastra, the scriptures, the bona fide scriptures are the words of God, right? So all knowledge, everything, just like when you buy any electronic gadget, what do you get along with the gadget? A manual, right? The function of the manual is what? To guide us how to use that gadget, right? So we can use it in the right perspective, understand what the gadget is for. Similarly, with this human life, this human body, and this entire creation, there is a manual. How can such a wonderful thing not have a manual, right? Even a small little instrument has a manual by the Creator. So such a huge, magnificent creation, how can it not be without a manual? So the manual is the Scripture, right? So today we will be speaking on the basis of these bona fide Scriptures. Okay, of which primarily we're speaking from the Bhagavad Gita. In fact, all the bona fide scriptures be it the Bhagavad Gita or the Quran or the Bible, every scripture gives emphasis on this aspect of faith. Very strong emphasis. So, in the Bhagavad Gita itself, Lord Krishna explains in many, many verses of how faith is very important for one who is seeking spiritual knowledge. Right? For any knowledge, you need some ingredient. So, in seeking spiritual knowledge and practicing spiritual knowledge, one needs faith. It's a very important ingredient. And he also talks of what are the advantages, what are the benefits of having faith, what are the disadvantages if one doesn't have faith, and so on. But there's a whole chapter, the 17th chapter in the Bhagavad Gita, which is titled as Divisions of Faith. So it's a huge thing. But today we are just going to touch, in short, and try to understand the basics, what exactly we mean by faith. So we start off with, what are the different types of faith? What are the different types of faith? Any volunteers? Anyone? Sorry? Science, yes. And? Yes? What are the different types of faith? Yeah. Sorry? Completely blind faith, yes. And? Faith on scriptures, yes. And? Sorry? I can't hear. I can't see, Sagar. Who is the absolute faith? Sorry? On anything. Yes? Faith on anything. Faith on the parents. Okay? Teachers. Our own experience. We have some faith, okay? That means experience on our own, ourselves and our abilities. Yes? Okay. True. Whatever your inputs have been good. So, basically, the Bhagavad Gita explains that faith is classified into two types. One is laukika or material faith, mundane faith. Lok, bolte na, laukik. So, laukik faith, and second is nirgun faith or transcendental faith. So, these are the two basic classifications of faith. So, what is this laukik faith? The Lord explains that this faith, laukik faith, faith in this material world, it's basically material world, whatever you see around and everything, is divided again into three types. That is faith in the mode of ignorance, faith in the mode of passion, and faith in the mode of goodness. Yeah? Is it clear? So in this faith in the mode of ignorance, is that some people have faith, and they worship with faith, ghosts and spirits. They have faith in that. So that is faith in the mode of ignorance. I think in India everybody knows this, right? Yeah, many people are there who worship ghosts, worship spirits, right? So many students also try it out, right? Calling dead spirits and all that. You know that in college, right? So many people do it. Try to check if you pass, fail, something like that, right? So many. But this is faith in the mode of ignorance. The next, a little higher, is faith in the mode of passion. The Bhagavad Gita, it is explained, in people who are in the faith in the mode of passion, they worship anyone. In the sense, even an ordinary person, they start worshipping as God. Any very whimsical, any political leader, aap hi Bhagwan hai. Start worshipping, keep their photos, make temples of them. Any actor, we all know it, right? It exists in many cities in our. There are temples of actors, actresses, demons, political leaders. Yes, and they are worshipped. People have faith. Cricketers. People go there. They offer obeisances. They do aarti. Yes. Yes. They do that. And that's faith. They have complete faith. So this is faith in the mode of passion. So just a small example, Srila Prabhupada explains in this Bhagavad, the same context. He says during World War II, who was the main, villain in that World War II? Hitler. Yes? Of course, there were many people, but Hitler is very prominent. So Hitler, this person in World War II, when World War II was going on, it was crisis. Crisis all over the world. Okay, and India was getting affected too, because we were dragged into the war, right? Because of the British. So, but in Calcutta, Prabhupada says there was a man who was there at that time during World War II who used to worship Hitler. A lot of faith. Why? Because Hitler started World War II, this man made lot of money in the black market. Yes, Prabhupada says this. He made lot of money. So, he was worshipping Hitler. Lot of faith. So this is an example of faith in the mode of passion. And little higher than that is faith in the mode of goodness, where people are worshipping demigods in different ways. You know, Brahma or Surya or Indra. Different demigods. Okay? So these are different types of faith. Now the very important characteristic of all these three. What are the three? Faith in the mode of ignorance, passion and goodness. All of the three, the basis is only how I can be benefited. Huh? How there will be little more material enjoyment, how I'll have more money or whatever. All material facilities, how it will be better. Whoever gives me that, I'm ready to worship. Yes? So that is very characteristic. Then Lord Krishna explains that this is all material faith. That we said, it could be our own experiences, it could be as many people put in inputs. Whoever, if our thing is just based on improving our material situation, then all that we are using as faith is laukik or material faith. That's one category. But higher than that, the category two is nirguna faith or transcendental faith. So what is the definition of this transcendental faith? So in the same Bhagavad Gita, this definition is given. What is the definition? That when one has firm belief that simply by acting in Krishna consciousness, that is in service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I will achieve the highest perfection. There is nothing more required. When one has that faith is called as transcendental faith, nirguna faith. Okay? So simply, the definition is very clear, that simply by acting in Krishna consciousness, devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I will achieve the highest perfection. There's nothing more required. When one has that faith, that is called as nirguna faith or transcendental faith. Yeah? So, now I'll just quickly, of course there's a lot of difference, but just to make the point very clear, because we live in a place, this country, there's so many things we will see, and we start shaking and believing, is this right? Is this right? This one says that, you know, my mom says this, my friends say, you know, do this. So, unless we have a very clear understanding, we'll keep on, you know, going like a pendulum. Yeah? Sometime here, sometime there. Yeah? So we have to have our concepts very clear. So though it is a huge thing, but I just try to make it into just around 4-5 points to understand, differentiate between. All of us answer this question, no? Distinguish between this and this. Yes? All our question papers are this. Distinguish between 1 and 2, 3 and 4, so many. Yeah? And it's very tough. Because then you really need to know the subject to keep on writing. Yeah? Otherwise you may keep on writing the same point in different words. Right? Those who are teachers will know that. Why point go patch point, you know, they have made it. Same thing in different words. Right? We all know because we've written like that. Right? So, the same way we'll just differentiate between Laukik faith and Nirguna faith or transcendental faith, right? So, first thing, very important point, material faith, this Laukik faith is based on this body. Huh? We just think that I am this body. So, let me just take care of this body, whatever it needs, different ways. So, whoever provides me that, I'll worship that person with faith. Right? But we have to understand the basic understanding in the Bhagavad Gita is that we are not this body. This body is temporary. We are the spirit soul. And the soul is eternal. The body is there for some time and then it will be destroyed. But the soul is eternal. So that faith, when we are using Laukik faith only for this body, then it is temporary. And it keeps changing. Because the needs of the wants of the body will keep on changing. Right? So, every time we have a different want. When maybe 2-3 years back, you had a different want. Right? When you are in your 10th standard, you just want to pass 10th board. Not pass, maybe, I mean, you really want to score well in 10th standard board. And after 2 years, you're not bothered about 10th standard boards. You have something else. You're not pray. That this want will not be the same. Correct? It's different. So, everything related to the body will keep on changing. Right? So, that is why Laukik faith is perish. It's always changing. And when this body is finished, that is the end of the story. It is perishable. Correct? So, but there will be so many people, depending on the changing wants, they will have a list of people that they have faith in. Monday I worship this, Tuesday I worship here, Wednesday I go here, Thursday I go here. You know, because everything has to be taken care of. You know, my finance, my education, then, you know, everything. So, Monday I satisfy this because I have faith. Yes, true. Right? So, and people say, are bahut Bhagwan ka bahut karte hai. But, kya karte hai? That we can only understand when we see through the eyes of the scriptures. Right? You're fasting for, I kept this vrat and I did that and so many things. True. We are not criticizing them. But that is a level of faith. Correct? Which is understood the scriptures as Laukik faith. Correct? Because you're only thinking of the material body. Whereas, contrary to this, the Gopinath ki jai. Whereas, when we are talking of Nirguna faith or transcendental faith, it is based on the soul. Right? So, the point is very clear that we are doing it for the purification of the soul. So, it is eternal because soul is eternal. So, first point of difference is Laukik faith keeps on changing and it is temporary. Whereas, your Nirguna faith or transcendental faith is eternal because it's based on the soul. Second point, Laukik faith is always self-centered. Right? We are only thinking of I, me and mine. Right? My family, my this, my society, my country, my, and my. Whatever benefits mine. So it's self-centered. Right? So whatever it takes to build up. Whereas transcendental faith, we are not thinking of me at all. We are thinking of what? What is the definition? That acting in devotional service to the Supreme Lord. So whatever is favorable in service of the Lord, that faith is transcendental faith. Right? Samsiddhir Haritoshanam. That is, means you are thinking of satisfying the Lord. So it is not self-centered. Third point, when we are actually in Laukik faith, one may do lot of things with lot of faith, but the success is not guaranteed. Let's analyze this. Just a small little example, very gross example, but very small, which will drive the point through. Like we are in Bombay, Mumbai, which is also called as Bollywood. There are so many young people, it's a fact, so many young people, boys and girls, who come from different parts of this country to become what? Actors and actresses in Bollywood. Now they have faith in their own abilities, they have faith in people who are guiding them. They may have faith in so many things, but the aim is that we have to come on the, whatever it's called, silver screen or whatever. So, that is the aim. And they may work for years, But there's no guarantee. And they're working with faith, right? Faith in the mode of ignorance, goodness, passion, whatever it is. But the success is not guaranteed. And even if they get success in achieving that goal, how long? How long? Huh? Where are all the actors and actresses of yesteryears? Of your parents' time and grandparents' time? Just ask them. Does anybody even know? Nobody even knows. Nobody even bothers. Right? So they have achieved some success, but since that faith and the whole experience of process of that faith was all based on this material body, when the material body dwindles, it's gone. And the success is also not guaranteed. Whereas when you're talking of transcendental faith, nirguna faith, anyone in any position who sincerely tries this process of transcendental faith, success is guaranteed. Krishna himself is giving that guarantee. Svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat. Even little endeavor, it will never go waste. Success is guaranteed. It's a huge difference. Huh? And the fourth difference is that because Laukik faith is always self-centered, so it will definitely only clash with other people's interests. For example, Hitler. He had so much of faith in himself or faith in whatever he believed in, but what did it lead to? Did it bring about peace in this world? No, it just brought destruction. Huh? Or for that matter, even now, there are so many terrorists who say that they're doing it on whatever, their own faith, right? But then that faith is not bona fide. So what is it causing? Whether they are happy or not, I do not know. But definitely it's causing destruction to many other people. Correct? You agree? Another instance, there are so many people who have faith that, oh, if I kill animals and offer a sacrifice, then I will be happy or whatever it is. I mean, so much of... But then, it's only causing pain to other people. Yeah, that is very characteristic of this mundane faith. In fact, many years ago, I remember when we were children, there was one man, he was a serial killer, murderer, roaming the streets of Mumbai. Now, you would have a big stone, and whoever was sleeping on the street, he would crash in their head. And the reason he gave was that he had been told by some goddess. He had faith in that goddess, whoever, to do such a thing. So, that's just giving destruction. So, this material faith can only give rise to destruction. Whereas spiritual faith, that is faith which is transcendental faith, which is based on the soul, can only give peace and happiness to one's own self and to everyone around. We see the rishis, we see the saints. What to speak of giving, I mean, causing violence to anyone? They won't even cause violence to an ant. So peace and happiness for themselves and everyone around, just by following the path of nirguna faith or transcendental faith. And the last point is that how by material faith we go on doing a particular thing, worshipping faith, but all related to this body. So again and again we are in the cycle of birth and death. But whereas in transcendental faith or nirguna faith, by worshipping and purifying the soul, you are out of this cycle of birth and death. You are back to the spiritual world. So that is those are the basic differences between nirguna and transcendental faith. Can we just go back? Anybody? First point? Loud. It's based on the material body. The transcendental faith is based on the soul. Second? Self-centered. Whereas the transcendental faith is not self-centered. It's on satisfying the Supreme Lord. Third? Success is not guaranteed. Even if after all endeavor. And even if the success is there, it's short-lived. Whereas in transcendental faith, success is guaranteed for anyone, whoever sincerely follows the process. Fourth, it only leads to destruction. That is material faith. Whereas transcendental faith will give rise to peace and happiness. And fifth, you are back in the cycle of birth and death. Punarapi jananam, puranapi maranam. Whereas transcendental faith, out. Yes? So these are the basic difference. So now we understand what is superior. Though we may be in different levels of material faith, it's not wrong. But since we know there is something higher, we have to rise. Right? We have to raise ourselves to that level of transcendental faith. We know there is something higher. We can't just be moving around in that same cycle. We know there is something much higher. So we have to rise to that level of faith. So the faith that we are discussing today is that transcendental faith, the nirguna faith. We are not talking of the faith of this world, faith in all those different modes. No. Though faith is an essential ingredient every moment of our life, but our point of discussion today out of our Dr. Frog wells is to know that there is something much higher. And what is that? Transcendental faith. Whether we are there at that level or not is not the point. We have to reach that level. Okay? So the next point of the presentation is that we will be just discussing few examples on the power of this transcendental faith. Power of people who possessed this transcendental faith. But is this transcendental faith just fictitious? Or have there been any person, or has there been any person who actually possessed that faith? What Krishna is talking, is it practical? Is it achievable? Or are we just talking of lofty things? So the beautiful drama that the girls performed is a very, very important drama. So it's a huge, there are many, many personalities who actually possessed this transcendental faith. All of the scriptures, the bona fide scriptures, explain so many people who possess this transcendental faith. But we don't have the time in this to go through all of them. It will take months and years to cover. And we may not even finish covering. If we all sat here for years and years, we could still go on and we'll not finish. Right? But today, we'll just take examples, three examples, and understand how this is actually practical. Practical for each and every one of us. So the first example, you saw that sequence, skit of Duryodhan and Arjun. Yeah? Everybody saw that. Most of you, I think, saw it, except for people who came in late. So it was a sequence where just before the Kurukshetra war, Arjun and Duryodhan both go to Krishna asking for help. And finally, of course, you saw the thing. But the thing is, that Arjun, whatever it is, only wanted Krishna. And Krishna is saying, I am not going to fight. I am not going to take any weapons. And now in a war, what is the use of a person who is just going to be a silent onlooker? Do you need just an audience to keep looking in a war? And if you had a whole army of people just looking, you want to recruit such people? Yeah? And Krishna is very nicely saying, I am not going to fight. Now, do you want me? But Arjuna said, no, I want you only. And Duryodhana is saying, how foolish. He's saying he's not going to fight. And he's only one person. And Arjuna is choosing him. Said, okay, fine. I'll take the whole army. So many soldiers, so much of weapons. I'll take that. He thought he's very intelligent. That's point apart, but why did Arjuna choose Krishna? Yeah, what was it that made him decide that I don't care? I don't mind. I don't want anything else. I only want Krishna. Even if you don't fight, you're just there. That's sufficient. Why? Because Arjuna had that faith that Krishna is the Supreme Lord. What is the definition of that nirguna faith? Firm belief that just being situated, Krishna consciousness, highest perfection, whatever it is. Arjuna was absolutely convinced. Because wherever there is Krishna, there is victory. That's fine for me. And this was not the first instance that Arjuna was going through it. If those of you know what the Mahabharata is, the Pandavas, the five brothers, they actually went after calamity after calamity after calamity. Their whole lives. And in spite of the fact that everybody knew that they were devotees of Krishna, but still they only had problems. And at the last minute, Krishna would just save them. In fact, even their grandfather Bhishma used to wonder, these people have so much devotion to Krishna, but why are they having problem after problem after problem? So many times in our lives, you know, when we take up spiritual life, and there is some jolt and say, "Arey, what happened? I thought everything will go smooth. You know, why there is some problem? Has Krishna forgotten that I am, you know, his devotee? Or is there some, you know, that he only takes care of your devotees and not me?" You start feeling like that. But the Pandavas, never any complaint. They just took it. No, it's Krishna. Krishna will protect us. So the same thing happened when this Kurukshetra war was to take place. That's so much faith. We don't want anything else. We only want Krishna. So, Krishna himself, actually Srila Prabhupada explains in a lecture, that Krishna himself was so amazed at their faith, at Arjuna's faith, that just look at him. He's gone through so much, but still when I'm saying I'm not going to fight, he just says, "No, Krishna, I want you only." The Lord was so amazed that the Lord wanted to reciprocate with that faith. My devotee has so much faith. So how did he reciprocate? Anyone? How did Krishna reciprocate? By becoming Arjuna's chariot driver. Partha Sarathi. You know what is a driver? Very menial position. The Lord, the Supreme Lord, became a chariot driver of Arjuna. And especially when you are in the war, a chariot driver, the person who is driving, I mean who is fighting the battle, cannot just say, "Oh Krishna, now go right, now go left." You know how they do it? They kick. Kick on the right, kick on the left. Means kick on the right means the chariot should go on the right. Kick on the left means go on the left. So that was the position that the Lord accepted for his devotee. Why? Because his devotee had firm faith. That was the first example. And in fact, to just conclude, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains to Arjuna that you declare, "Kaunteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashyati," that my devotee shall never perish. This is his promise, that whoever is my devotee will never perish. So that was the first example. Second example is Prahlad. Yeah, everybody knows Prahlad? Anybody who doesn't know Prahlad? Okay. Prahlad is son of Hiranyakashipu, who was absolutely against Vishnu. And this child, just 5 years old, he was ready to go against his demoniac father just because he had the faith in his spiritual master, that is Narad Muni, who gave him the knowledge, and faith in Krishna. He was ready to go through all the torture. We know how Hiranyakashipu tortured him. He threw him from a cliff, he put him in a pit of snakes. So much torture. Only thing that 5-year-old child had to say is, "Okay, okay, father, now no more Vishnu, only you." Right? He just had to say that. But he had so much faith that he went through the whole torture. In the end, Hiranyakashipu was so frustrated. He was frustrated. "This child is so fearless. The whole world is scared of me. But this child stands, my own son, he stands boldly and says, 'Oh, I worship Vishnu.'" So frustrated. So he said, "Now I have to kill you." So when he removes his sword and he says, "Where is your Lord?" He says, "He's everywhere." So he shows him that pillar. "Is he here?" He said, "Yes, he is here." So when Prahlad said, "Yes, he is here," he didn't think, "I don't know. Maybe he is here. Should be here. He says he's everywhere. So, you know, maybe." No, it was not some philosophical yes or some abstract yes. No, it was experiential yes. He knew for sure, he could see the Lord there. He said, "Yes, he is there." And because he was saying with so much faith, so much conviction, that when Hiranyakashipu struck that pillar, who came out? Lord Narsingadev. Narsingadev Bhagwan ki jai. That was the second example. The third, everything okay, these are all scriptures. Prahlad Maharaj, Pandavas. You talk of, you know, this day and age. Yes. What can be a more powerful example of this age of Kali Yuga than the example of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada? He's sitting there, right? There, blessing all of us. He is the founder acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. The very fact that we are all sitting here listening about faith is just because he had the faith to go out. At that ripe old age of 70, so when I see people who are 50, 60, our own family members, relatives, you know, it's so difficult. You know, everything is difficult. The body is old. It's so difficult. Ordinary tasks become difficult. And Prabhupada, at the age of 70, what a task to leave the shores of India without any money, without anyone to take care of, to go and give this message of Krishna consciousness to the people of the West. Why? Because he had complete faith in the words of a spiritual master. And it was not easy. It was not that, he just sat in a boat and he went there and people were all waiting there with garlands. Oh, come, you know. No! It just didn't happen that way. He had heart attacks, so much of struggle, you know. So, such tough times. And he didn't say, oh Krishna, I'm doing it for you. Why so much of pain? No. So, he wrote a poem actually when he was crossing the ocean. And in that he says, I don't have any qualification. But I have strong faith in the holy name. And I'm very sure that when these people hear this message of the Lord, their hearts will be filled with happiness. He used so much of faith. And what did he do? What we see here is just a small drop. There may be many gurus with many, many followers, no doubt. But what Srila Prabhupada has created is not just a group of followers, but people whose lives have been transformed, completely purified, with no sinful traces. So that is an example of Srila Prabhupada. So these three examples basically helps us to understand that these are the examples, just few examples of how it is the power of transcendental faith, nirguna faith that we are talking of. Faith beyond this material world. Now, that's good. The next question is, how do I develop this faith? Right? How do we develop this faith? We hear all this, but how do we develop? So the most important aspect of how to develop this faith is first associating with people who have faith or people who are trying to have that faith. This is the most important, because what we associate with is what we will become. And a Shraddha or faith is actually born in our heart when we associate with people who have faith. And in our lives, there is going to be crisis, whatever it is, because this world is full of, it's certified by the Lord himself, is Dukkhalayam or Sashvatam. It's temporary and full of miseries. So we are bound to have crisis. And when we pass through that crisis, our faith starts shaking. You've all experienced that? Yes, it starts shaking. So what do we need at that point of time? Association. Association of people who have faith. A very nice example of how this support from others who have faith is important is, you all know Napoleon? Yes. Napoleon was a big conqueror. So actually he was conquering many, many countries. So once some place that he was there, it was absolutely cold. And in that cold, he was actually losing his soldiers. His soldiers were not killed by the enemies. They were dying in a wintry night because of exposure to cold. So you know what he did? He introduced something called as Napoleon's Stolidza. I don't know, history students may know about it. It's called Napoleon's Stolidza. It's a technique that he used to protect his soldiers. And that technique is very important for all of us. What he did was, because they were dying in the cold, when you sleep, your circulation goes down and, you know, you're not able to survive. So what he did, he's made pairs in his army. Two soldiers. So these two soldiers, when the night would come, one soldier would sit and the other soldier would sleep on his lap. So the sitting soldier is awake, the person who's lying down is sleeping. Okay, so the warmth of this person who's sitting, he covers his body, so with that warmth, the sleeping one survives and he gets to sleep for 2 hours or so. After 2 hours, he gets up and he sits and the other one sleeps. Okay, so that's how and this technique worked. And the soldiers could actually survive and go through. So same way with all of us. When we associate with devotees, and since we are all there in this material world, there will be crisis. All of us will have. But when we take shelter of this association, then we will survive through those crises. So this Napoleon Stolitza is something which is very important for all of us. And when the other devotee, our friend, requires that support, we provide that. It's going to come. Correct? And the second thing is chanting the holy name. So associating with devotees who have faith, and second, chanting the holy name. These two things, chanting the holy name of the Lord, which we did this chanting before the program started, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So when we chant, our consciousness is purified and automatically this faith, this actually starts flowering. The firm faith is established in our hearts. So we spoke about all these personalities from the scriptures. So you may ask, okay, Prabhupada and everybody is very great. What about amongst us? Are there people who can have such a level of faith? Yes, we can. In fact, just amongst you, when most of you are students, so you must be wondering how, you know, I manage my studies and you say you have faith, and you say chant. How do you manage all this? Right? So we have one amongst you, I don't know if she is, but there's a girl she was studying her medicine. Now she is appearing for her MS exams, post-graduation. So when she was appearing, she was a very, very sincere student. You know, went through all her studies of medicine and she was studying for her MBBS, very sincere. The only thing, two things, she was studying very sincerely through her whole academic year for Krishna. Her focus was very clear. Yeah, and she used to chant. It was not that she was chanting so she was neglecting her studies. No, but she was doing everything properly. But just during her final MBBS exams, you know, the university exams, the day that her paper, first paper, you know, we have medicine, surgery and all that, it's huge. It's vast. When you're studying for medicine, it's vast. And it's like, even if you may be studying the whole year, but the day before the exam, you have to see the books. You know, it's not that I studied the whole year, so I'll remember. No, it's so overwhelmingly huge. So she appeared for her first paper, medicine, and she came back, and she had very high fever. And the doctors and the people there said, you have malaria. And she has to appear for the next paper the next day. Okay? Next day. You all know how it is. Next day morning. And she comes back and she's just not able to get up. She's just lying on the bed. And in our medical college hostels, it's very, very intense. It's very intense. The whole atmosphere is just, you know, everybody is studying. People don't sleep for days together during our final exams. Everybody is walking down the corridor, rooms are open, the lights are on, and it's very intense. And imagine this intense atmosphere, this girl, she's just lying down, she just can't get up. And when she was given this anti-malarial medicine, it made things even worse. And she started vomiting, and there was no question, she just couldn't get up and study. And this way, it went on till midnight. And everybody, including her roommate, are telling her, "But now what do you study? Only fail." It's very clear, no? That's a medical language everybody uses. Achpada nahi to fail. You know, so everybody's, and then finally she got little strength around, you know, beyond, after around 1 or 2 o'clock, 1 a.m., 2 a.m., after midnight, and she could barely get up. Now she just had around 6-7 hours left to go and appear for the next day's paper. Next day's paper was pediatrics. Huge, huge portion. It's unimaginably huge. So now her option was 7 hours left. She also has to chant her 16 rounds. So she would always chant her rounds of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. And study and go. So now the choice was just like Arjuna, you know, what do I do? So she thought, okay, I don't know what I study. I mean, half the time is already gone and I'm not in any frame to sit and concentrate. So let me just pray to the Lord. So she took up her beads and she started chanting. And can you understand, I mean, can you even imagine what must be the reaction of everyone around her? He just started looking at her. She's crazy. You're crazy. You just got little strength to sit up, remove your pediatrics book and start studying. What is this? Jap mala leke you'll start. And she didn't even have the strength to go on, you know, and everybody's, literally people started coming and telling on her face, you are going to fail tomorrow. Stop it. And she was saying that initially she was very disheartened by how people were saying this. But then as she went on chanting, just depending on Krishna, I don't know, I have worked through the whole year. Now it's up to you. I'm just dependent on you. Just like Arjuna, he was doing everything for Krishna. It was not that he was whiling away time, but now dependent on you. So this position, she was just chanting and it took a lot of time. So almost till 5 in the morning, she finally completed her rounds. And then she thought, okay, a little more strength, so let me just see my books. So she just read through some things. She said, now Krishna, you do whatever you want. I'm just dependent on you. And she went for this exam. And usually in our exams, you know, we have one paper which is tough. Unexpected questions. Yeah? So there she goes. And there comes the question paper. And amazing. Every single question in that paper was just what she had read in that last, whatever, 1-2 hours that she brushed. And she knew. It's not my ability, it's not by my strength, it's just the mercy of Krishna. And everybody else who had said, oh, you will fail, you will fail, you will fail, were dumbfounded on looking at the paper. Because they are not prepared for it. Yeah? So this is just a small instance that how, whoever we are, whether we are students or whatever it is, everything that we are doing can be done on the platform of transcendental faith. And this, she says, is just the association of the devotees. Because of the devotees, she had the strength to go ahead. And the last point that we will be speaking is, we have named the topic as, faith can move mountains. So what does that mean? Lord Jesus Christ used to say that if you have this faith the size of a mustard seed, you can ask this mountain to move, and this mountain will move. So what is that mountain that will move? So His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj explains that in all of our hearts, we may hear so much knowledge, but in our hearts there are so many unwanted desires, so many anarthas, and they are huge. So many sinful tendencies. They are like huge mountains, more huge than even the Himalayas. And to move them out is tough. It's almost impossible. So what do we do? When with faith we call out to the Lord, then the Lord helps. He reciprocates. For the Lord nothing is difficult. You know? And He can move these mountains without the least of difficulty. A small little story of how one man, he was instructed by his guru, you know, go and keep pushing this mountain. So every day he would go and keep on pushing. And for days he went on pushing and nothing happened. And finally came back disgusted. He said, nothing is happening. I'm pushing, pushing. So Guru says, I just asked you to push. You just put in the effort. The reciprocation of moving will be done by the Lord. So similarly, we may get all this information of spiritual knowledge. What is faith? How to develop it? But when we sincerely, eagerly try to put it in practice, sincerely pray to the Lord with that faith that please, help us and put this, take it up seriously by associating with devotees and chanting the holy names. The Lord will reciprocate and move this mountain. Thank you very much for your patient hearing.